The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, my friends, the kind of the subject for this week is the fifth and sixth step of mindfulness of breathing, which is to experience joy and happiness in meditation. And it's certainly not easy to experience that, and you can't just do it just because the instructions say so, you should do so. But to explore this territory of joy and happiness, meditative well-being, some of the conditions that support it, some of the things that bring it about, can be very helpful. And so that's a topic for today, this week. And So there's the precursor, often in the suttas, for joy and happiness is gladness. And the word is pamoja, P-A-M-O-J-J-A. And pamoja comes from the kind of the root word. We don't never know if the root or the etymology is that important for the people who spoke it, but it's certainly a fun game to play. And so the pa is the prefix, can mean either outward or upward. And the moja comes from the word for face, mukha. And so the idea of something of the face, uplifting face, a face that's rising up, or maybe a mouth. Sometimes the mouth is closely associated with this word for face. And it's the uplifting of the lifting of the mouth. I think of it as uplifting up the corners of the mouth to make a smile. So it's that which makes a smile, or a kind of maybe a beatific kind of upward gazing at what inspires us. And in fact, and for the Buddha, he encouraged people when there's difficulties in meditation to think about or imagine an inspiring, something that's inspiring, or but inspiring not in a way that's activating, because the word for inspiring also has the meaning for confidence or peacefulness or kind of brightness. So that which brings brightness or confidence or peacefulness, kind of a peaceful, confident brightness, maybe. So we'd say in simply in English, kind of inspired. And to be inspired, when we sit down to meditate, involves activating the imagination. And we find that imagination is regularly referenced in the teachings of the Buddha in relationship to meditation. And this was certainly very different than how I was introduced to both Vipassana practice and Zen practice, where the explicit and the implicit instructions was not to be involved in thinking so much, and certainly not to be involved in imagination. This was the meditation practice about just being present for things as they directly are, unmediated by concepts, unmediated by the imagination, just the experience in and of itself, and the direct sensations, the direct contact with things, and that's definitely true. But it becomes true as the meditation gets more and more centered in the present moment. But to get ourselves centered in the present moment and centered in the present moment with some joy, some well-being, imagination can be harnessed, can be utilized for that purpose. And so the Buddha encouraged people to think of an inspiring topic. And some of the things that he talked about that were inspiring was to think about the Buddha himself, so think about someone who you're really inspired by their practice, by their being, how they are in their life, in a way that kind of is inspiring enough to really want to sit here and be here and kind of puts to rest other thoughts and concerns that keep you distracted. And or to the encouragement is to be inspired by your own virtue. And of course that requires us to be virtuous, and but the word virtue really means virtuous conduct. So you don't have to be inspired by what you're feeling on the inside. The Buddha's teachings are, be inspired by how you act in the world. And if you're acting in the world without causing harm, if you're not, you haven't stolen any money from the bank lately, or you know, killed any of your neighbors recently, or done all kinds of things, then that's a source of being inspired. And it doesn't mean you have to be 100% virtuous, but to recognize the way that we are living a virtuous life, even if it's just for today, not to be burdened by the past so much, but rather be inspired by what is good and beneficial. And so to be inspired by one's own virtue, maybe that's a hard thing for many people to imagine, to experience, but it's certainly one of the teachings of the Buddha, and one of the purposes of being virtuous is to create the inner context to be inspired and gladdened and uplifted, so it's easier to stay present. And the other thing that the Buddha makes explicit about what's inspiring is mudita, the appreciative joy. To think about the things in the world that bring you a wholesome, nourishing kind of joy, like so, to share in the joy of others who are doing wonderful things, and be inspired by that. And so this idea of being inspired by things is not meant to take us away from the present moment or to be a spiritual bypass. It is not meant for us to dwell there and just kind of keep thinking about and fantasizing about it, but rather to do it just enough that it really orients us to the present moment. It brings this uplifting kind of feelings and goodness that we're capable of then feeling, and then riding those feelings into the present moment. It's sometimes easier to be present if there's some modicum of well-being that's here as well. And it's not meant to be, again, overriding or a bypass of the challenges we have or the suffering we have, but it is helping to create a context where it's easier to be with the challenges, to work through them and meditate with them, breathe with them. And so the principle here that I think that supports this idea of using the imagination for something inspiring is that to do it when the alternative is worse. Human beings spend a lot of time in their imagination, imagining the future, what's going to happen, the terrible things that are going to happen, imagining the past, remembering. You know, some percentage of our memory is fantasy. It's well known that we don't necessarily remember accurately what happened in the past. We're telling ourselves a story, we spin it a certain way, we spin it around the things that really have a charge for us, whether it's good or bad, and we kind of stretching certain parts of the story, the memory, to fill the space of memory in a way that's not completely accurate, and so sometimes that can be very depressing and agitating. Certain fantasies can be not helpful at all, so if we're doing that anyway in the imagination, then it's possible to use the imagination. Don't fight the imagination then and try, which might not be working, but harness the imagination to help you be here in the present moment, to gather together. And then when you're here enough, then you can let go of the imagination and then sit here and be present. So, you know, in the course of these teachings, I've offered some imaginary kind of scenarios, images to help. For example, I love this image for breathing of the waves of the ocean washing up on the sandy shore, and kind of I have this image of myself of the especially when the waves once they're washed ashore, they're washing up across the sand and making the sand wet for a while, and then they're receding, and then as it recedes, the sand is wet, but then the water kind of that's on the surface kind of gets pulled into the underneath the sand, and so you get a whole different texture or feeling of receding and absorbing. And this image of this I use it different ways in meditation, but imagining the breathing, the experience of breathing are the waves, and my body is the sand. Or the experience of breathing, the sensations that come and go, the cycles of upswelling and receding with the exhale, is washing across the shore, the sand of awareness. And it kind of that image kind of keeps me there and involved. I've known some people who have, one person in particular, who used the image of a large bird, maybe a, I don't know, some large, wonderful, majestic bird flying in the sky, and the inhales and the exhales were the flapping of the wings, the slow, long, just flapping in the wings of the bird, and that kind of kept her engaged and involved and flying along. And so to use the imagination to help us be connected. And then to use it to help us be inspired, and to know, as I've said, how not to overuse it, how to use it so it's onwardly leading in the direction I talked about yesterday, that we're going towards doing less and less activity to quiet or still or states of mind, and to more from coarser to the more refined, more active to the more peaceful. And so we use these things to support that process, knowing at some point we have to let go of it, not relying on it too much, not overdoing it, not depending on it, not using it as an antidote so we don't have to face our difficulties or work through them, but rather as a way so that we can be present in an effective way. So particularly I want to end now with the idea of inspiration, with that which brings a brightness, an uplift, a delight, brings confidence, brings trust, brings willingness to engage and practice, and this idea of an inspiring things. And I would encourage you for the next 24 hours to consider what inspires you, and stay close to thinking about it and visiting it, being with it, somehow be connected to it. Or maybe there's many things, and maybe you can talk to others, friends or anybody who you, strangers, about, say you have this assignment to talk about what inspires you, and you'd like to share a little bit and hear from them what inspires them, and maybe in ways that are spiritual in nature or has to do with some of the fundamentals of what gives our life purpose or value. And in doing so, I hope that you have some wonderful conversations and some wonderful time with yourself. What is it that inspires you? And maybe that you can stay close to that. So thank you very much, and we'll continue a little bit this the way the Buddha uses imagination for meditation tomorrow. Thank you.